You're listening to Banter, a BMX podcast with John Doker and Anthony Berardi. Our next guest has been referred to as the legendary rider from Buckhorn. He moved to Toronto shortly after high school in the early 90s with the sole objective to ride BMX and have fun. He's still doing it. He rode with several generations of riders in the GTA over the years and was an integral part of the ICC, Inner City Circle crew, that produced many of the best street riders ever to come out of Ontario. Our guest has had his own clothing line called Royal City. He has ridden all aspects of BMX from flatland to skate parks and everything in between, but is now the main guy behind the infamous Rexdale Trails. When he's not riding, he enjoys restoring classic bikes. He now resides in Ajax, Ontario with his lovely lady, Tammy, his beautiful daughter, Madison, and their goofy but lovable dog, Rex. I'd like to introduce a good friend of both mine and John's, Mr. Ben Rennie. How you doing, Ben?
Good, man. Good, good.
Benny, awesome. Hey, glad John. To have you on. All right. This is great.
Awesome.
Yeah, we're all set. We had a little technical difficulty this afternoon, but everything's good now.
No problem.
Awesome. Yeah. Just for anyone who might be listening to this podcast, I just want you to know that Ben Rennie is a good friend of mine from way back in the day.
Way back.
Yeah, from almost the beginning. And he's from a small town called Buckhorn, Ontario. It's famous for a statue of a buck. And also, I believe, the home of Alana Miles. Is that right?
Her mom lives there.
Well, close enough, right?
Yeah.
Take what we can get.
And my mom cut her mom's hair.
There you go.
Now, speaking of Buckhorn, are your parents still there, Ben?
No, they now live in a town called Wilberforce. So,
I know it.
Yeah, Wilberforce. I mean, we originally came from Haliburton, moved on to a farm in Selwyn, just outside of Buckhorn. And then on to another farm in Buckhorn. And that's pretty much when I started riding, actually.
What's the population of Buckhorn?
There wasn't any back then. I could probably guess maybe 100 people.
It's more than a little, less than a lot.
Yeah.
Well put. And where did you ride flatland, Ben? I always thought that was a funny thing.
When I was done with my chores on the farm, get my riding shoes, my running shoes on, ride down the quarter mile long driveway, and then up the dirt road to a busy highway. And I would practice flatland on the Highway 507.
The only paved area.
And let me tell you about the Highway 507. It's the highway that motorcyclists come from all over to go as fast as they bloody well can from Buckhorn to Goodrum.
I'm lucky to be sitting here, yeah.
Yeah. There's been a lot of people killed on that road. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
So, Ben Rennie. Where to start? I mean, we could go on. This is going to be great.
Well, start from the farm. Start out from there.
Yeah.
If I could, I'd like to shout out to Aaron Marcinkowski, Jason Smy, and Bob Harrison, the original Buckhorn crew.
Aaron's on Facebook nowadays. Yeah.
Aaron MC United. That dude, I was just telling Anthony before we started. One day I was getting a rare break from the farm. Parents had taken me into town, into Buckhorn, you know, I was in the town, getting ice cream. And I'm standing there eating an ice cream cone. And this kid rolls past me, man. I'm like six, seven years old. And this kid rode past me. He's wearing nothing but a pair of running shoes and a pair of those small 80s Adidas shorts, man. And this kid rode past me on a black and yellow constrictor. Which I believe is from Sears.
Sears Constrictor. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Black frame, yellow mags. And he rode past me and it was an epiphany. It was like the second coming of Christ, man. I was like, what is that bike? That bike is amazing. I just stood there and I was telling Anthony, like, just picture me dropping the ice cream cone with my mouth hanging open. Like,
that was a crappy bike, Ben. Maybe not.
Dude. But back then I didn't have one.
No.
And the OG yellow OG K mag spinning past me and just like the stance on him as he rode past, you know, it was awesome. It was awesome.
I got your back here, Ben. I saw that bike when I was a kid and I thought it was pretty damn cool.
Hey,
I
have, Paperboy had one.
I currently have, there was two models of it. There was the mag single speed version of it. I just recently, thanks to Chris Silva, just recently picked up a two speed model of it. Excuse me. It's got two front speeds, a front derailleur and a rear single freewheel. Sick bike, still black and yellow, but anyway,
BMX.
Yeah. Still the BMX. Yeah.
With gears.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, somebody raced in the 80s with gears. Was it Harry Leary? Somebody did like a two speed thing
and it had a front derailleur.
Yeah. Front derailleur. It would go from like a 40, like a 42 tooth down to like a 30, like really small. I couldn't imagine like
for like, gate starts.
Yeah, I guess I guess you'd be in the small gear at a gate start and then click into the big one. The big gear has teeth missing off it, so you can just see like teeth shattering and flying into like guys' eyes on the track, you know.
that's yeah. Wacky.
But anyway, so back to when Aaron rode past me, that was it, man. BMX bike. I later on met him in grade one. He had just moved into Buckhorn. My older sister, 10 years older than me.
At
the time, she was already living in Toronto, already had her first job, making a bit of money. We ended up at Canadian Tire in Peterborough on Lansdowne, or not on Lansdowne, Canadian Tire on
George
Street. Yeah, originally.
Yep. Oh, that was the spot.
And yeah, she bought me my first real BMX. What was it? A gray and red. I want to say rally, but who knows? It might have said super cycle on it, but it was gray and red, coaster brake. And that was it, man. I bought a red full face helmet at the same time. When I wasn't wearing it, I would put it on the dashboard of my parents' station wagon. And everywhere we drove, that red full face helmet was sitting on the dash of the car, dude. Everywhere out of the car, that helmet came with me, man. I wore that thing everywhere.
That wood panel wagon? That same
yeah,
one?
Dude. Same one.
Same yep. one. All right. Mm-hmm. I think I ended up doing a tune-up on that one.
Yes, you did. In Montreal, you did a tune-up on that. Yeah.
Yeah. At the contest.
We did many miles in that car.
Oh, my God, Anthony. Dude, we'll get into that trip in a minute. Oh, my God. Yeah. The Jar Jam was the best part.
Probably the best road trip car.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right.
Okay.
We're jumping ahead.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Well, this is good because Aaron and Anthony and I talked about Aaron a little bit. We're kind of like trying to remember him. And Aaron actually sent me pictures, I guess, of me and Buckhorn, Jay Smith, and pictures of the rabbit.
M&J's. I think that was M&J's.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, I've gotten to know the guy now. He seems like a nice guy.
Yeah. Me and Aaron later on. We like me and him tight as heck. We used to ride our bikes to school every day. Like, you know, country kids, you'd ride seven miles to public school in Buckhorn, you know, fly down the hill, pull a big skid in the yard. All the kids go crazy, you know, oh my God, you know, I did a show. If my grade six teacher is still out there, I believe, there is video footage of a freestyle show I did in our gymnasium, I think in 1986 on my,
wow.
Yeah. I think it was on my green Norco freestyler with the white mags.
You had one of those?
Yeah, dude. It was the, green Norco freestyler with white mags.
The fake forklifter stem and all that, that one.
Yeah. The white stem.
I didn't know you had one of those bikes.
Combined with the
ACS. That was a sweet bike.
Yeah, I love those bikes.
Oh my God. Yeah. Combined with the ACS rotor, the forklifter stem, and then like the 8-inch Haro knockoff bars they made. Like, dude, my setup was up to my chin.
Didn't get any better in Peterborough having that.
Right. Okay. You know what? So I did a show with that bike in our gym. I rode to My Adidas by Run DMC.
Classic.
Which tape had just came out? Tapes. Woo! The kids are like, what tapes? What is he talking about? that bike.
Walk this way.
Yeah, like, man. Way. So that summer, me and Aaron got dropped off in Peterborough in the big city, and he was on his purple rally. I think it was from Kmart, and it was a purple rally. It had pegs at the top of the fork, pegs at the bottom of the fork, double crossbar on the handlebars. Anyways, sweet bike. I was riding my Norco Freestyler, beautiful looking bike, of course. And what do dumb kids do that aren't, we don't know a lot about the city, dumb country kids. We go to the mall, Peterborough Square. No. It was, what's the mall right downtown? That used
Peterborough
to be?
Square.
Peterborough Square.
Peterborough Square.
Okay. So down in the lower part, there used to be an entrance. And right in that entrance was a magazine store. And we were like, let's go in and see if they got the latest BMX Plus or BMX Action.
I know where the store is going.
Dude, we left our bikes outside. We can see them. We walk in. We both look at the magazine rack. We both turn around. Gone. Both bikes. Gone.
I was wondering. I'd never seen any remnants of this Norco.
Gone, man.
It was probably in Jamie McGovern's attic.
That's where I first saw Jamie and Ducky doing high five lawnmowers at Peterborough Square.
Man.
Could have been.
You know, later that summer, we went to a police auction because my parents made a report to the police. We went to a police auction, and my bike was there. It was stripped of all the green paint. It still had the white mags. It was raw in color. They'd painted the handlebars white or something. I got that bike back, and I think that's what I rode until I got the
RevCore.
The Norco came out with one more good model. It was the Team Freestyler, the Team Issue Freestyler. Remember, Taro had one. Taro Sato had one. I had the yellow and black one, and I think Taro had the
that bike,
the pinkish purpley one in black. It had like a chrome back end, like the Sports and Masters did. It sort of looked like that bike.
Oh, right. The later models.
Yeah, okay. It was a Norco Team Issue. And I believe that was the frame I rode until I went to Woodward Freestyle Camp in 89. I got the RevCore Freestyle frame.
You know, I learned something funny about those Norco bikes, and I don't know if it's true, but apparently, you know how it had that the top two bent down, sort of like a dyno?
Yeah.
Apparently, the Norco team was doing shows, and somehow GT copied the Norco, essentially. That's the story.
No way.
And that's how Dino got the bent down to it. Now, I don't know if that's true, but some dudes out in Edmonton were telling me that.
Wow,
and,
crazy, man.
Hard to believe.
Yeah, well, they would know, man. A lot of the OG Norco riders now live in Edmonton. Dude, you guys probably remember, as I do, going to the Peterborough the Home and Sportsman Show in the spring. Yep. The Norco team would usually be doing like a show on stage and stuff. Who was one guy? Rob Thring?
Oh, yeah.
Norco.
That was the big name.
Man. So.
Norco Super Socko.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I didn't see any of those shows.
Dude, I did. Yep. I did.
I saw them at the Toronto Bicycle Show a couple times.
Oh, no way. Right on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw them at the Peterborough Boat Show or something random. We were there.
I remember going to the circus with you, Ben.
Who were we looking for?
I think we were looking for the Norco team, and there's some dude like with a beer belly, but he's on like a 10 speed, like an artistic cycling bike or something.
No, we were We were looking for the guy who was sponsored by Ozone at the time. And he was supposed to be part of the Ringling Bros Circus or something. And who was his name, man? He was a Flatlander
For Ozone? Because I'm coming up with Randy Tishman, but that was Kuahara.
Yeah.
Ozone, Pete Brandt, Eric Emerson, but those guys were in the circus. There was another dude. Yeah, Tishman was in the circus. That's right.
And I remember you, John, actually brought to my attention that this guy was going to be here, and that was our mission. We were going to go find this guy and ride with him.
I think we snuck into the circus.
Yeah, we did, man. We just saw a giant elephant pee all over the place.
That's right. It was the craziest thing I saw. I still remember that pee. That's enormous. Stream of pee. It's a big animal. And then we met the dude after the circus. Yeah. And dude was like just a gnarly carny. He's just like, get the fuck out of here, you kids. Sorry, I didn't mean to say that, but I mean he was friendly enough, but I think he was like, you know, a few beers in by that point.
Oh, anyway. Man, it was Jeff. Was it Jeff Cotter?
Jeff Cotter?
Jeff Cotter. That could be it. Yeah.
Think was he on Ozone?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he was.
That dude, could be it. We were disappointed.
Some cobwebs just came out of my nose there.
Oh. That'll happen. Anyway.
So, yeah. So after the team issue, myself, my friend Aaron, and my cousin Chad, Chad Rennie, are my dad and my cousin's dad, my uncle Rodney, took us to Woodward Camp 1989. I showed up on the Sunday of the Two Hit Meet the Street contest that had happened.
Did you see the contest? Did you miss
it? No, I missed it all.
Sucks.
Yeah, but dude, there are Vision Streetwear stickers everywhere. A couple people left riding. Like Rich Bartlett was there. He was actually a counselor.
That dude has a sick podcast with Space Bros. It's one of the best ones they did, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Anyway. Really? No way.
Yeah.
The Butcher.
Really good. Yep.
I played a bike tag with that guy on one of the rainy days. You go into this big covered area and everybody gets on their bikes. It's basically bike smash up derby. And whoever was left standing got won. And yeah, Bartlett would always run that. That was pretty funny.
Is that where they rode Flatland? That same
spot? Who at Flatland? I was under the impression Kevin Jones was going to be there. I got Robert Peterson.
Okay.
Robert Peterson was
the master of balance.
Dude, he was super nice guy. And you know what? He was really honestly, man, that guy was dialed. Like, he was a really good rider. Who else was there? Bronco Tirada. He was the ramp guy. He was the half pipe guy. He taught me how to roll in. I will never forget him. If he's still riding, that would be really cool to,
who'd he ride for? That name doesn't ring a bell.
I don't think he was ever sponsored. He was really good on vert. He told us that he had invented the top tube. What was it? It was called the Tooth Decay Air. I believe it was the top tube standing look back.
Interesting.
Oh, okay.
I think Matt Hoffman, you there's a couple photos, like Matt's got his foot on the seat tube and the top tube. He's doing a look back. I don't know if the foot's off or something. I'm pretty sure it's called a Tooth Decay Air that I'm speaking of anyways. And Bronco Tirada was like, I invented that man. And that dude, he was super rad, man. I'm pretty sure I'm pronouncing his name right, but
this is 89, right?
88, 89. Okay.
Both years?
No, I just went the 1 year. You got sent, if you wrote in to the address to Woodward Camp, you got sent a travel brochure thing. And it told you, you know, you would be staying in these cabins. I remember actually Bronco Tirada was actually, you could see a little picture of him on the folder or something. Maybe Robert Peterson on there, but showed up there, had a great 7 days in Pennsylvania at that camp, life-changing event, and I'll never forget it. My dad and my uncle coming back to pick us up 7 days later, and we go into the bike shop, and that Rev Corps was there, dude. And that looked like the crown jewels, man. That thing, best chrome job on the planet. Best knurling job you ever seen on a platform.
That bike was cool, man.
It was a cool frame.
Head tube angle was like 74. I believe it was up to date at that. It was 74.5 or something.
It was probably 73. It just seemed like that much steeper.
Maybe, yeah. Dude, hey, I have my picture of it in the cornfield, bro. So I'll take a look at that.
I remember you riding that bike probably when we first started riding with you. And whatever reason, I guess because you didn't have any money, you were brakeless.
Yes.
A lot of that. And that was before people were riding brakeless. And you were killing it, dude. Hang fives, elbow glides, all rebates.
I learned all my brakeless stuff on that bike. Yeah, because my front brake cable broke. I couldn't afford another one. I was still like a kid, you know. So I learned, it forced me to learn hang fives properly. It forced me to learn a lot of tricks properly, actually.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of like a sort of like a, I don't know, godsend that thing was. Brakeless.
Decker and I have talked about this before, but basically everyone in the 80s was brakeless. The brakes sucked.
They did, you know, and it's true. It really, we should have just got rhythm period and we would have been a whole lot better off. Like, I don't know, man. Like, all we did was invent better ones. Our bikes became, you know, 40 pounds heavier to make them work. And you know, combined with the gyro, man.
30 years later, we come full circle.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'll be honest with you. I swore off brakes for good, like about 10 years or something ago. I think it was about 10 years ago. I'd just gotten a new terrible one, Garrett Burns SFA frame. And I went to the trails, had my brakes set up. And I've been for many years on and off with brakes, on and off, on and off. Street, never. Never, 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 never. Maybe a front brake here and there, just do some nose picks, maybe some flatland, but never a back brake. On trails, I would ride brakes. I would get influenced by Taro, take them off, put them back on. Ben Huizenga would be at the trails, another good rider at the trails. He'd be always brakeless. I'm like, yeah, I'm going back to brakeless. And then, so one year I got this T1, Garrett Burns SFA frame, brand new. And I put brakes on, go to the trails, and I went over a jump. Instead of doing my normal eject, toss the bike to the side, run down the landing in a baseball slide, I stayed on the bike, pulled the brake midair, landed on the jump, went over the bars because I landed on my sprocket, stayed on the bike, ate it, and I was lying there out of breath. I knocked the wind out of myself, and I was like, that's it. And I screamed. I'm like, I'm never riding effing brakes ever again, man. And they have never been on my bike since. I will never put them back on. I will be 70 years old riding down the street on a BMX bike with no brakes. Sworn off, 100%. Unless it's for front brakes. I have a little love for front brakes.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Let it be known.
Yes.
Let it be known.
Yeah.
So anyways.
No going back now.
No. So... Yeah, after Woodward, basically, I think that was around the time I met Jason Bond in high school. Jason Bond and Mike Donye. Yep. Everybody knows Mike. Well, if you don't know Mike Donye, BMX Plus, I believe it was a two-page spread of him hang-fiving at Niagara Falls.
Niagara Falls. Mm-hmm.
I believe he's the first guy I've seen do a hang-five at Peter... No, at the Lansdowne Place.
I remember seeing him at Lansdowne Place in front of the Sears, right into a death truck. And
yeah,
I mean, I'd only ever seen a death truck in a magazine at that point, and I was like, no way. On his white Osborne Pro.
Yeah. Oh, man, what a sweet bike. Man, his bleached blonde hair and the Tony Hawk style. Mike, I went to high school with Mike, and that guy was like, dude.
He went to your high school?
Yeah, dude, he was, when I started in grade 9, I think he was in grade 12 already.
Yeah, he lived in Apsley.
Apsley, OG.
Yeah, I didn't know that he was from Buckhorn, or he went to Lakefield High. Where did you
go? I was friends with his little brother, too. But Mike, Mike was the coolest kid in school, man. He didn't, like, and he wasn't even a hockey player or anything like that, but... Dude, he was a chick slayer, man. Yeah, I remember after the two-hip King of Vert in Waterloo, I was wearing my shirt. Freshly signed up, autographs everywhere.
Oh, you went to that contest?
Yeah, dude.
Damn.
Yeah.
John, you and I are the only ones that didn't go.
Oh, my God.
You two did not go to that. That is terrible. Shame on both of you. Shame on both of you.
Dude, let's not even go there.
Not for want.
Dude, me... my buddy Aaron Marcinkowski, and my cousin Chad, we went as well. Same thing. The three of us went down. I believe when Matt pulled the 900, we were in that crowd. We ran out, and I believe we were right there. I was getting crushed, and Aaron turned to me. He goes, dude, Dennis McCoy just jumped on me, man, from the top of the ramp. Like, dude, that was crazy. That was one of the defining moments of my life. Seeing Matt pull that 900 in person and running out onto that ramp is crazy.
Yeah. Crazy. I bet that was pretty awesome.
I got Dave Volker's autograph, Brian Blather's autograph. Dennis McCoy jumped on Aaron's head. Yeah, crazy. Saw the 900. You know who else?
Bill Newman riding Flatland out there.
Yeah, I was just about to mention that, John. Bill Newman riding Flatland off behind the ramp.
Yep. I heard the stories.
Dude, it was hard. Like, it was a challenge to either keep your eyes on the ramp or look over and watch this dude riding flat. It was just blowing people's minds.
Yeah.
He sort of like that new style at that time. Just, yeah, he was really, really one to watch. Like,
if I could go back in time, tell you. Anthony and I would be there, I think.
Wow. We'd have to steal a car or something.
I don't know. Whatever it took.
Man. Yeah, that was amazing, man, seeing that. And you know what else was super cool was it also seeing Jay Muron riding the Terminator.
Oh.
Jamie Merritt. He, I think he had a broken foot. And Jamie got a picture in BMX Plus, I think, or one of the magazines, and it shows him. I think it's a little black and white photo of Jamie, and he's about to do a backflip or something. If you guys remember, I don't know, but anyways,
backflip, isn't it?
If I'm not mistaken, I believe I don't know, maybe caused some controversy here, but Merritt was one of the first ones to do them on
that. That's about the time,
like fakie,
because
fakie style, yeah. And I guess
because Hoffman was in Europe when he pulled the first one, and that was at the end of the 80s.
Yeah, so, I'll never forget pulling that issue of Go out of my mailbox.
Oh yeah,
in the country, and seeing that backflip in front of me, man.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, Jamie Merritt, Terminator there. I believe he had a broken foot, but he was dying to show people that he could pull backflips. And yeah, and then there, like, Jay Muron was there. It was cool, like, because also as a kid from Canada, you suddenly realize, hey, there's dudes from Canada who are entered in a two hip king of vert. What the heck?
And holding their own too.
And totally holding their own against the pros. And it made you go, oh, we can do this too, right? Like, up until that point, it was you know, you're on, you know,
California,
you're starstruck. Yeah, everything is California. Yeah. Uniforms, killer bikes, GTs, Haros, and you're this kid in the country, and you see two dudes from Canada who are in there, and you're like, what? Sick, man. And we
talked about this with Brett Downs, and when we saw Dorkin, it was like, hey, there's dudes that are in Pennsylvania in the same kind of climate we're in, and they're awesome.
Yeah.
Like, they're amazing. And that was like, oh, lights go off that you can actually get that good.
Yeah.
Without having to move to California.
Exactly. Dudes are wearing jeans and t-shirts, you know, riding a Motorhead and Rush and shredding gnarly old bulls, and then showing footage of breakdancing. If I can fast forward that to the inner city circle, 2003, I meet, Enrique Abarca, George Carijutin, Mariano, Kike's brother, and these guys were part of a crew called Bag of Tricks, a breakdance crew. And right there, street riding BMXers, killer breakdancers. I was like, oh my God, man, I'm part of the Plywood Hoods. Like, it was awesome. These guys had no clue of the Plywood Hoods.
Of course.
The history of it. I believe I have Taro Sato's Dorkin and York 3 downstairs on VHS in the hard case cover.
Oh, wow. You have the original copy.
I'm pretty sure.
He left a copy of a copy. I'm not sure.
He left it at Hogtown. I had Hogtown Bikes. And when I started working there after he worked there, I was like, man, this guy's leaving this here. I got to pick this up and save it. So anyways, yeah, Tarl, if you look at that.
I don't know, you have it? No, he does.
He probably does. He does now, yeah. So yeah, man. So that was all before meeting you and Anthony.
Well, not the ICC guys.
Yeah, well no, not the ICC stuff, but
the Mike Donya.
Yeah, Mike Donya, two hip KOV, all that stuff was so 89, 1990 comes into play.
I was just gonna say, with that Waterloo thing, it's worth mentioning that a lot of good Canadian riders, mm-hmm. I mean, you just think about how many good riders have in North America have come out of Canada. It seems like there's a lot of them. Like,
yes.
And I don't know what it is. Maybe just having those long winters, you want to get out there and be active. But
yeah,
I think there's a lot of interest in BMX.
That contest and getting footage of it. I mean, you'd always had a few things in magazines before. There was a big contest in BC in the 80s that got in, I think, Freestyling or BMX Action.
BC's always had a good scene too.
Yeah, man. but then that contest really kickstarted a lot of things, man. It just showed, and seeing, especially like Jay Miron up there and him being on the cover, BMX Plus was it for the two that meet the street. You were like, what? I can do this, man. Like, you know, like that's. And then sure enough, so meeting Jason Bond, Mike Donye in high school, they were older than me. Jason Bond one day goes, hey, man, he's like, you got to meet this guy I met, John Dowker.
Wait, I knew Bond before you did?
I'm pretty sure Bond, yeah. Bond knew you guys before you guys knew me.
Because I remember riding with Bond and him saying, there's a rider in Buckhorn. And we were like, really?
Oh, weird. So we met Jason before all that. I mean, it's all kind of the same time frame.
Yeah.
Interesting. He was a good rider, man.
Dude, Jason was awesome. He had the rickety mini half ramp in his mini half pipe in his backyard. I loved it, man.
He taught me fakie wall rides.
Yeah. Oh my god. He taught me fakie wall rides as well at the little wall ride behind the post office in Lakefield there.
He's a professional mountain biker now, at least.
Oh, dude, I'm totally
trainer or something like that.
Bond training out west. Got him on Instagram and Facebook. Yep.
Good dude.
Yeah, totally, man, totally. I guess M&J's opened up, M&J Skate Park,
right?
And the infamous opening or the allowance of bikes, and we all went that one night. That was basically, I think Jay introduced me to you.
Is that what that photo is from, or is that a later?
That's the photo. That was the night. Remember, you showed up in all the hockey gear, and I hadn't met you yet, and I laughed at you, and you were like, "Fuck, that guy's an asshole."
Sorry, I don't remember that. I think everybody laughed at me, but maybe I picked you as the asshole.
At that point, I think John was living on my couch.
I think he was. You told me. Yeah. I think you probably had just. I think you had just gotten out of the army, John. If I'm not mistaken.
No, I was still in high school, or that was the last.
Or maybe, yes, you were still.
I think his parents had moved away.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
that's it. Yeah. So maybe I was living on Berardi's couch, unofficially, but that's where I was living. Yeah.
And then John, so we, M&J started.
Yeah.
Everybody doing sessions there. I remember meeting John Denlock and Jane McGovern. Brad LaBelle, you, Anthony, John, and Mike Donye was also. I don't
he
know.
He killed Mike, it on Park too. That guy.
Yeah, Mike's not in that photo, but remember, Mike was the first one to go over the. I think it was an 8-foot spine.
It's crazy spine. He was 360, and I remember.
Yeah, and then he would go over it, and then do the wall ride chasm gap, and pull his back brake, and leave a skid up like 20 feet up on the wall, just to like ease everybody. You're like, oh man, are you kidding me?
He was so smooth too, like
butt.
Man.
Yeah. Yep.
I remember.
Yeah, and then so meeting you. That was the time when I started getting phone calls on the phone in the farmhouse. Hey, do you want to go on a road trip? Do you want to go on a contest, or do you want to go to Toronto? And got my driver's license. As soon as I got my driver's license, parents were like, as long as you can put gas in the station wagon, you can take it anywhere you want. So $20 here and there led to trips to Peterborough, led to trips to Toronto, a little bit more on the trips to Montreal and stuff. But
you could fit about 5 kids and 5 bikes in that station.
Oh, man, that station wagon was great.
It was so awesome.
Yeah.
Wood panel. Yeah. I mean, it was like, you know, National Lampoon's Vacation style, fucking the best road trip vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So then it started. I mean, you called me up one day and you wanted to know if I wanted to go to a contest in Orleans, Ottawa.
I remember that.
And my dad ended up driving me into Peterborough or to Lansdowne Place. I met you in the parking lot of Lansdowne Place. And you were driving your 82 turbo diesel Rabbit, I think.
It wasn't a turbo.
It was, oh, yeah. Sorry. No turbo. Sorry.
There's no turbo. No
diesel Rabbit. That's it.
It definitely wasn't a turbo. No.
And who else was on that road trip? Who knows?
It was just me and you.
Okay.
In that Rabbit, that on the Orleans trip was just me and you. We ended up, I think we met Dave Netto and Nelson. Do you remember Nelson?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Anthony Kiedis.
Yep. Anthony Kiedis lookalike. And
we slept in cardboard boxes, did we not?
No. That was the first Orleans contest at the grocery store parking lot with Pat Chenier.
Oh, I remember. Yeah. Little box jump. I was on the car. Little box jump. I remember that.
The infamous Drifter Dave later on told me that he was at that contest. He's like, dude, can you picture a long-haired dude doing bar rides? I'm like, we had our own long-haired dude doing bar rides, which was Nelson. right?
Oh, yeah,
so anyways, that was probably the first time I rode with Drifter Dave or any of us rode with Drifter Dave. We just didn't know it.
Sure.
Orleans happened. Me and you rode that contest. It was so much fun. Then we drove home in like a raging thunderstorm and you had what? You were falling asleep at the wheel. You were sticking your head out the window into the rain and slapping your face, trying to stay awake. You were driving me all the way home to Buckhorn.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
Yeah, that was great.
Sounds about right.
And then after that, it was basically you moved to Ajax or something. I think you met Jay Smith, Jay Holmes, and Marco. And you also ran into Taro in downtown Toronto.
No, I ran into him on Yonge Street up in Richmond Hill, and I yelled at him. I was like, hey, BMX, and he gave me the bird.
Yeah, he flipped me the bird.
I'm like, no, BMX.
Yeah, so that was, that right there, that meeting, you meeting Taro Sato was the catalyst for everything in terms of what happened after that, which was you calling me then to go up to Pickering and to Toronto, to Richmond Hill, Jay Smith's house in Pickering, Taro Sato's house in Richmond Hill, the infamous mini ramp in the backyard.
Oh, yeah.
Man, stories. Oh, yeah.
The Molson Export sign.
Ooh, best parties ever there, man.
Mm-hmm. Somehow he had a billboard. A bunch of wood from a billboard, Molson Export billboard, I think it was.
Yeah, that's
he Export.
Yeah.
So the ramp said Molson Export.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
now I remember going to Orleans with you for a show out of school.
Yeah. Anthony. Oh my God. The show at the high school.
You're like, you want to go up? And I said, sure.
Yeah.
And then the only thing I can remember is staying at some French guy's house that didn't really speak English.
Pat Chenier.
I don't know. Was that who it was?
Yeah, it was Pat's house. He was pretty good at it. But no. Actually, I think you're right, Anthony. I think the first night we stayed at a friend of Pat's, and then I think the second night we stayed at Pat's house. Do you remember his mom running out? Whose toothbrush is this? Whose toothbrush? And it was my I left my toothbrush in there or something. Yeah, dude. Yep. So that's when we first met Pat. That show. And I think that's when those guys, because there's a crew called
Crazy Crew.
And I think Pat and his boys started Crazy Crew.
Right.
Again, another thing that Drifter Dave was involved with later on that I didn't know about. Drifter did shows with Crazy Crew as well. I did a show with Pat and the gang at a high school in Orleans. Me and Anthony went. And I think they bought us Subway and bought us some Coca-Cola and sent us on our way afterwards.
Yeah, that's all you got. It.
But that was pretty rad though, man. Like, John, I can understand why you do shows and stuff, because with Freestyle Connection.
Oh, it's fun. It's easy. And you get paid.
massive high school. It was like a two floor high school. I remember being in the gymnasium and there was like a second floor, you could kids looking out through this window down into the gym, or you could look into the gym from the main floor. And to hit the box jump, you had to come out of the hallway where the lockers were.
Yep.
So here's me. I mean, dude, I was ratty back then, man. Black hair, long black hair, like my dino.
No brakes.
No brakes. My dino comp painted half green, half black. I think some of the fluorescence still sticking out. And pedaling down this hallway of the high school, past the lockers and kids cheering me on, busting into the gym, pedaling across the floor at top speed, and then hitting the box jump, doing a one hand, one footer to can-can. I have a place going nuts. Yeah. You know, and just like, yeah, this is the raddest thing
ever. Something you could never do if you're actually going to that school.
Exactly. Yeah. As a kid, you probably wanted to do that. And meanwhile, here's some guys showing up, you know, crazy crew doing it right there. And that was pretty rad. Yeah. So that was my first very first experience with like a crowd, I guess. That was pre-contest, anything like that. So yeah, that was pretty cool, Anthony. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah.
Yeah. I just remember staying at this and I was like, I don't even know who this guy is.
Yeah, man. Pat. Yeah. John, who did Pat mistake someone in Chicago? Remember in the hotel room? He's like, oh, it's Perry Mervar. And wasn't it Mark Eaton or something? If I'm not mistaken, it's on video, dude. Jamie Sinyard has it on Local Disorder. And I believe Pat's in the hotel room. And I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's either Hal Brindley or Mark Eaton. And Pat's like, oh, here we have Perry Mervar. And the guy just looks at him like, dude, I don't think so.
language barrier, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's a goofy dude. That guy,
awesome dude. Yep.
Yeah, I ended up dating his girlfriend. I think that was a bit of a problem. But...
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Anyways, we won't go into that.
Yeah. So after that, man. I mean, there was getting to meet everybody. You introduced me to Taro, and then
he started venturing out to Toronto a lot.
Yeah, and then I think there was one more trip. Me and Anthony went on to a play clothes contest in Montreal, in Boucherville. Yeah, Boucherville. Mm-hmm. And we took, I think that was the last road trip in the station. No! Yes, it was. It was the last trip in the station wagon.
I was at that contest, I think.
Yes, you were. That's the contest when you did the tune-up on the station wagon, actually.
I'm like, that's right, okay.
I got plugs and wires, and you're like, I just kind of want to ride. I'm like, you just throw it on 2 hours later, man, you're covered in like grease. And you're so pissed off. You're like, oh my God, I can't believe I just did that.
That was a sick contest, though. I think it a lot was. Of basic dudes were there.
Yes.
Yep. It was fun.
Yeah.
That was all the basic
sport was changing.
Yep. Yep. That was really fun contest. I believe
those two paper contests were great.
Yeah, that was the one where me and Anthony pulled in around the back and we were so excited we finally found the place because we'd been lost. And we pull in around the back and I'm gunning the old station wagon. We got bikes in the back, luggage, and probably the Cream tape blaring on the stereo.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize this driving along behind this warehouse unit, there was like paved loading docks that went down on slopes. And I'm like, woo! We got to the park, dude. And I'm doing about 60 through the parking lot and fucking flying off these banks. Bam, the front end slams down on the ground. The bikes all come up onto the dash. We're lucky the bikes didn't smash through the front windshield. What? One hits Anthony in the head. Oh, man. And then we finally pull up and there was some guys outside of the park and they're like looking at us like, holy crap, that was the best entrance ever made by anybody.
two things I remember about that trip. One, it was the magazine from Paris, I think it was Go or Freestyle or whatever, where they had some French sayings that were handy. They were stupid ones, like, you know, je t'aime la bibliothèque or whatever, you know, yep. I love the library, where's the nearest hair salon, that sort of thing. And Ben and I had them taped to the dashboard.
Yes, that's right. Je t'aime la bibliothèque. Je m'appelle.
I remember going,
my name is Egg, and you?
I've heard that out of Ben's mouth.
Yeah.
Times. Yeah. Why? I don't know.
And then we were going in under the river in the tunnel, and they had one lane cut off with all the pylons, and we were knocking every single pylon down, and all the French drivers were getting mad and swearing at us. Do you remember that?
Oh my God. That was amazing. The station wagon was great. It was great. Oh, yeah. That was amazing. I believe that may have, was that the contest where Pedro de Santos got himself caught in his rear triangle? The nutsack split?
The testicle incident? Is that the contest? That's
a contest. It's a sensitive issue. I love Pedro. Recently connected with him on Facebook about a year or two ago. But nice guy. I think that was the contest. Like he got like what?
Yeah.
Like all these staples. Oh man.
A bunch of stitches or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He'd be a good guy to get on this podcast because he did a lot for the sport.
Oh, Pedro, yes. Please get him on this podcast, man. He would be amazing. Dude.
He's way into those VW buses now. He's got like a synchro.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And you know what? He's still riding. He's still putting pictures up.
He's a cop.
Yeah, crazy, eh?
Anyway, good dude.
Totally, man.
He's putting on all those Montreal contests, I think.
Yes. Oh, man. Like, yeah, much gratitude to him. Much gratitude.
And since we're talking about those contests, remember the one guy who's like, he always looked like he rode for Hoffman, little guy with the ponytail, and killed it.
Oh, Eric Gagne, I believe.
Is that his name?
I believe it was Eric Gagne.
Dude was a shredder. What happened to that guy?
If I'm not mistaken, I believe he passed away. I'm not too sure. I believe years back now.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah. Didn't know that.
There were two Erics out of Montreal that were just rippers. And if I'm not mistaken, and hopefully I'm correct on this, if somebody out there can, you know, correct me.
Now that you mention it, maybe I heard that.
It was Eric Gagne, yeah.
Wow.
And just to give him a shout out, the last time I seen Eric ride, I was at a Taj Mahal contest. mid-90s, late-90s, and I was standing there, and Eric walked past me, grabbed his bike, put on his full-face helmet. He was, this guy was hungover or still drunk, laughing. Him and his buddies were laughing. Gets on his bike at one end of the park, and there was, there was a standalone quarter at one end of at the skate park, and this guy cranked across the floor, dude. First thing, flares it perfectly.
Dude was good.
6 to 8 foot flare, lands it perfect, rolls away, takes his helmet, laughing. Going back to the bar. And I was just like, that guy's rad, man. Never said a word to him, just saw that, observed it, and was like, sick, man. So that was, that was
dude was rad. That's why I had to say something.
Man. I guess by now we're about mid-90s. And that's kind of like, you know, moved to my sister's basement in Scarborough. Yeah. And there it just sort of things led to street riding. Started riding a lot flatland with Marco Marini. Mm-hmm. Potsy, what's happening, Potsy?
Shout out to Potsy. He's still out there. He's on Instagram now.
Yeah, you guys, I don't know if you guys know this, but me and Marco almost got a place together. We almost moved in together. John, you're already in Michigan. I think by this time, Jason Holmes had already moved to Barrie. I didn't see Jason Smith too much at this point.
We're getting into the 90s at this point, right?
Yeah, right. And me and Marco were still going to parking lots, riding flat. I go hook up with Tarl to ride some street at that point. Jamie Senior at Cliff Crest Plaza, Chris Marinos. And that was also the point when Marco sort of was also eyeing up moving back to Montreal. Mm-hmm. So he ended up doing that. We never got a place together. And then I ended up moving downtown. And that was it, man. Ended up downtown after living in my sister's place. And then moved downtown Toronto, and that's when the POT crew started in the late 90s. The POT crew, pot crew, was Pros of Toronto. That term is used very loosely. You can credit Tarl Sato with coming up with that. He's like,
yeah, double meaning there, I think.
Well, because at the time we were heavily influenced by the POWs, right? The Pros of Westminster.
Of course.
The POW crew, that was man, you've watched videos back Dave in the day. Dave Clymer, Brian Foster riding to Zeppelin, Trampled Underfoot is one of my all-time favorite.
So Mike Griffin.
Mike Griffin. So anyways, Tarl came up with POTs, the Pros of Toronto, and the Pot Crew. And that was basically, I mean, me, him, Graham Burke, all the Flatliners, and later on, Jeff Thompson, Dave Stewart, Drifter Dave.
Did Dave move out to Toronto around that time, or is he already out there?
No.
He's in Belleville
still. I guess we should, yeah, we'll get into that. So just after like moving to Scarborough from Buckhorn and from Peterborough, I moved into my sister's house in Scarborough, Warden Lawrence, right in Scarlem. And that's sort of when the Toronto scene, I started getting familiar with guys who were just sort of on their way out, like the Beaches crew, like Tall Mike, brother, Peter, remember Crazy Peter?
The little guy?
Yeah.
Those guys are cool.
Yeah, right. So that's when Jason Smith and everybody, and I remember even Anthony used to come to the shuffleboard sessions as well.
Yeah, those were good times.
Yep. Jason Holmes getting the big crowds going and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, so, man, that's the best.
Yeah. After that, I guess Rampage, the Canada version, Rampage Skate Park opened up, Rampage 1 in North York, just north of Toronto. And that's why I started going there. And I met Jeff Thompson and Drifter Dave at skate park. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. How can we forget Nuno Pinto? We got to mention Nuno Pinto because we've already got on to Taro. So along with meeting Taro, Nuno Pinto.
Maybe Jamie Delaney at that point, right?
Jamie Delaney. Oh my God. Jamie Delaney. I met Jamie through, I think it was either Jason Bond or Ian McLarty.
Oh, really?
Me and Jamie Delaney have been friends for a while, man. Me and Jamie go way back.
Interesting.
Jamie and I and Ian McLarty went on a road trip to an Albies contest. Dude, oh my God. We didn't even talk about Albies contest. Holy.
oh, boy.
So, I met Jamie Delaney back then. We went to, I think, our first Albies contest. I don't even think I was old enough to drive. I can't remember. Ian McLarty's dad drove us in a brand new white Town and Country minivan, 1992, I think, 91. And I remember, it was one of the very first Albies contests.
So wait a second. Was Ian buddies with Jamie? Is that the deal?
I can't remember if it was, remember.
They're from the same area.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. And then you knew Ian because he would vacation in like Bob Cajun or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I met Ian through, Bob Cajun. And, Ian's dad drove to this contest down in Michigan. And I'll never forget it because that was where I first discovered one of my raddest first street spots, these brick spines. I believe if anybody from there is listening, will be listening to this. These were like these brick spines, and I believe they're at a GM plant, it's a huge complex there in Michigan. I can't remember.
Were you supposed to be riding those?
No, but they were just, we were out riding around. We decided to go out and ride around and see what was out there. And we came upon these like massive brick spines. They were sick, man. I've never seen them since. I've never seen them in a magazine. I rode them. That was a pretty cool contest because I remember in the hotel room coming down in the elevator, and I got into an elevator with the members of Primus who were playing a gig. Yeah, dude, they were playing a gig. I had just looked at a young punk rock dude from Toronto. So as soon as I got to Michigan, I picked up Independent Music Paper. It was seeing what punk rock shows would be playing, and Primus was playing. I was like, oh, cool, Primus is in town. I get in the elevator. These dudes are in the elevator with me. And I just stood there silent. Like,
you didn't say anything.
Just my hands down beside my side. And I just like, oh my God, oh my God. And we get down the main floor and the elevator door opens and the dudes walk past me. And Les Claypool, you know, friggin' the three dudes from Prime, they walk past, right. And I'm like, holy smokes, man. No way. And, Anthony went back up, told the dudes, man, it was pretty funny, man. Yeah, that was pretty wild.
Didn't say anything to him.
No, didn't say. I was scared. I was scared. These guys, I believe Les Claypool was in a trench coat or something. Yeah, pretty funny.
Looked
the part. Yep. Betty's got a big brown beaver. And man, we got to talk about the Albies contest because those were my first contests. I enter expert flatland, expert street. If anybody remembers this, I would come out riding to. You used to be able to give your tape in. I can't remember who it was, actually Todd from Albies you give your tape to. But I had Metallica and Anthrax back to back. Green Hell by Metallica, Milk by Anthrax, two very fast songs. And I came into that, do like super fast combo lengths, flatland, and box jump tricks. I remember killing myself on a wall ride. But yeah, man, I think I got like third place at that. I won some shorts and like a t-shirt and something else. Like, if you guys remember Fuse Concepts back then.
Yeah.
Yep. Fuse Concepts was one of the like the first independent like sort of clothing companies in BMX.
Yeah.
Won that sweater. It was pretty cool. I was like, whoa, man, cool. And that was also, I remember seeing Taj Mahalik ride in pro. Taj, I believe that's when he was still just starting out in Michigan. Never actually talked to him, but I just stand there and watch a guy blast at the box jump. Just blast huge. I think he had dreadlocks, spray painted black bike. Just gnarly dude back then. It was pretty cool to be able to watch him.
He was getting big air on that
box. Yes, he was. Huge. Yeah. Taj would pedal across the fucking parking lot and just blasted that box.
Yeah.
The box would move when he would hit it. And like it would, you know, just yeah, it was pretty rad to see, man. Yeah.
Those contests were pretty epic for sure.
Super fun, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can remember going to one and I decided it would be a good idea to get a gallon of apple juice to stay hydrated.
I remember that. And you spent the entire time in the toilet, dude. I totally remember that.
I've never drank a gallon of apple juice since. Kids. Don't ever drink a gallon of apple juice. It's a bad idea.
Oh, man.
I mean, yeah, I was in and out. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, those were the Michigan days, man. And I was telling Anthony about... remember when me and you switched frames that one day at your place in Michigan? You wanted my GT frame and I wanted your Homeless Soul frame. We changed frames that morning. We were drinking Long Island iced tea.
I must have been drinking. I traded you my Soul Bro for a GT.
Yeah, because, dude, you it was mid-90s. You had to have it was a GT Pro Performer Team frame. No rear stand platforms, nothing. But it was sort of a new school thing at the time.
Yeah, it was the down tube was bent, but it was opposite the older GT. Yeah, I remember bike.
And it had a steeper head tube angle than the Homeless Soul Bro.
Oh, and that's what I was about.
Yeah, so you were like, let's switch these up. Me and you got hammered the morning after being hammered the night before. And I was telling Anthony, we both turned our bikes over. We both put our sprockets on the wrong side.
Sounds about right.
That was great, man. Yeah. Good times. Yep.
Yeah.
Man.
That's what happened to my Soul Bro.
Yes.
Yeah. He never knew where it went.
Yep. Somehow I ended up with your black Soul Bro too, that you bought directly off of I'm having a brain fart. Florida. Here
we go. I already told the story to Anthony before we started the podcast.
Okay.
So me, you, and Marco go down to the Florida contest in his Nissan.
This is a few years later. I'm living in Michigan at this point, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Me and Marco left. We picked you up. I went into the trunk, into the cab of the truck. You and him rode up front. I remember going. We pulled over to a Burger King or something, and a new Star Wars that just came out or something. And Marco bought a Star Wars cup. He was stoked on it, and he accidentally left it in the back of the cab. In the back of the cab with me, and we're going down the highway to Florida. We're almost in Florida at this point, and I had to pee so bad, dude. I had to pee. And so I'm like, I'm sorry, dude. I grabbed the Star Wars cup and I filled it up. And then I'm like, I still gotta go, man. I tossed it out the back. I hung the back gate open. What is the highway going down to Florida, I-95 or something.
Probably 75, probably, yeah.
I hung it out of the back, bro, with people driving behind us down the highway. And I just peed. I peed all over them down the highway. This car's like, trying to get into the other lane. Dude, and we got to Florida, and I remember
the whole way in the back of that Nissan pickup truck.
We left Canada. It was snowing. We got to Michigan. There was even more snow in Michigan. And then I remember by the time we got to Florida, I was sweating in the back of that cab, dude.
And then we slept on the ramps at the skate park.
We got there. We went to a fruit stand to get some fruit. And you and Marco got into an argument. You pissed him off. He got into his truck and took off, left us alone in Florida at a fruit stand holding the bags of fruit.
That's right.
And me and you went over to the park. We ran into – didn't we meet the dude who owned Dance Comp back then, dude?
He was there setting
up or something.
Because he had a tent there.
Yeah, yeah. And me and you, we slept out on the street. Marco came back. Me and you slept on the sidewalk. Marco slept in the truck. And then, yeah, the next morning, me and you woke up. And we were sleeping beside the homeless dudes. And the homeless dudes were sleeping down further down.
The homeless bikes dudes.
Yeah, homeless bikes. Like, I'm talking like.
Just to clarify.
Dude, James Shepard, John.
John Yull.
John Yull. Anthony, that's who it was.
English, yeah, that's right.
English guy, John Yull.
Who did ride for years and then got back into it. And now.
Oh, crazy.
Kills it. Yeah.
And I can't remember who else. I remember walking down and they had a couple of frames and forks set up and handlebars for sale. And I think I had like $300 in my pocket, dude. And I got a homeless. Dude, I believe it was the homeless player. Yeah. It was the player, frame and fork. And I gave them all my money that I had. And I had to bum money off you and Marco for the rest of the trip, which pissed both of you guys off. You guys were so angry, dude. But I had the sweetest frame fork ever, bought straight from the homeless dudes, right off the sidewalk.
So you bought a player who somehow somebody got a soul bro.
You had the soul bro. I believe you had the soul bro via Jamie Senior.
The newer soul bro, a black one, like a next generation. That's weird. I always thought you bought a soul bro.
No. Because later on I got a homeless porn star from Toronto Cycling, Scarborough. The porn star was the longer one. It still had a platform on it.
Yeah. I remember you having that too.
Yeah. So
must be unrelated somehow.
Yeah. So, anyways, I had a lot of homeless frames in my life, a lot of porn stars. But yeah, man.
Remember sleeping on the ramps? I remember sleeping on the ramps, and there was mosquitoes.
Yeah. Yep.
It was hot and muggy. Yep.
And I believe I witnessed Pete Augustin, if I'm not mistaken. He broke his leg on the box. He did a massive 360, huge. Yep. Landed and he just sort of put his right foot down or something and it went through the landing of the ramp and he broke his leg. I can't remember.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. That was a contest of love, right?
Yeah. I think so.
And that was awesome. That was awesome. And Sean McKinney showed up with the Fletch frame.
Yes, the Fletch frame. Oh my god, I totally remember that. Yep.
Yep. Oh yeah. Totally good contest. That,
yep. yeah. So after that. Florida, that's when it all just sort of became sort of like Toronto. Like I moved downtown down to Vaughan and St. Clair, right downtown. Got an apartment on my own downtown. Taro got an apartment just down the street from me. And that's when the Toronto scene just really like sort of the more the newer scene started to blow up. And then all of a sudden, late 90s hit. So there's me, Nuno Pinto. You're already in Michigan by this point. There was me, Taro, Nuno Pinto.
Silva?
No. Silva wasn't in the picture at this point. The late 90s, right? Okay. So we were riding street downtown. Rampage 1 opens up in North York, just north of Toronto. Canadian Rampage 1. And that's when I start meeting Drifter Dave Stewart and Jeff Thompson. I also met,
Jimmy. So many,
No. Jimmy, I met actually through the trails in Rexdale. But yeah, like this was also the point. Oh my God, how can I forget this? I have to mention this, man. I didn't first move downtown. I first moved out of my place. I moved into an apartment with Doug Pilkey for a year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Shout out to Doug.
Shout out to Doug Pilkey. I love the man.
Vert Dog.
Dude, oh my God. This is how I met Jamie Delaney and Doug Pilkey through Jason Bond in high school.
Wow.
Jason Bond got a hold of me. He's like, dude, I know a guy who's got a vert ramp in his barn north of here. I'm like, all right, cool. Let's go. So we go, winter day, we show up. I meet Doug Pilkey, Jamie Delaney. I believe it was, man, 1990, 91. I was 15 years old. And sure enough, Doug Pilkey's got a full vert ramp in his barn.
No way.
I was just like, whoa, dude.
I've never heard about this before.
Oh, man, it was sick. It was like, you know, it's a dream come true, man. And
wow.
Doug would just drop in, blasting, man. 8-10 feet, no problem. That is maybe his peak. I don't know. But just killing it. I was just in pure awe of this guy, dude. Just in pure awe. Yeah, so that's when I first met Doug Pilkey and Jamie Delaney, actually. Was like, yeah, it was about 1990, 91. Thanks to Jason Bond driving me up for that. And I moved out of my sister's basement in Scarborough, late 90s, moved in with Doug Pilkey into a place in Scarborough. Later on, Glenn Vander Hayden was a roommate of ours, lived in
mayonnaise.
Our Glenny, <Yeah. laughs> Glenn lived in our, Glenn rented a closet from us. Amazing story, dude. I'm not kidding. This dude slept in our closet. He put a little mattress in there. He slept curled up in there every night.
Jar of mayonnaise. He's good to go. It was
so hilarious, dude. I love Glenn. That's a great story.
Glenn. Shout out to Glenn.
Yep. So after that period, I ended up moving downtown, right downtown. And that's when me and Charles got our own apartments. That was also around the same time.
You're hitting the bars at this point.
All the bar stories. And you know, hey, John, you know what we should touch on? This was also the time when Paul Buchanan used to come up to Toronto to ride street.
So remember meeting Paul?
Yeah, and you remember actually meeting Paul. I'll refresh your memory. Remember that mini ramp jam in London?
London.
Les Kalman's backyard?
Absolutely.
That's when we first met Paul. And yep. I believe that was like, what, like 90? I think that was the first weekend that Marco got his truck. And he would not drive over 90 down the highway because he wanted to break it in.
Break it in, right.
It pissed you off so much. You used to get him so mad about that. And
so did we cruise to London in his brand new truck?
We cruised from Toronto to London.
I didn't realize.
90 kilometers an hour.
the whole way. So 10 hours later.
Yeah.
which ironically is how fast John's rabbit could go on the highway too.
And Anthony, this is great. This is such a good story. We pulled over to a rest stop at a McDonald's rest stop on the way down there. And John, me and you were walking into the bathroom. We opened the door and Berardi's there walking out and he shoves us both. You had gone to a football tryout or something. In Michigan,
yeah, I was probably playing at that point.
Yeah, you were playing or something, and me and John walked through the bathroom door.
I think I remember that.
And you were like just right in front of us, man. You shoved both of us. You didn't even hesitate. You just football shoved both of us to the ground.
What a coincidence!
And we're like, "What are you doing?" You were like, "Oh, I was playing football, and we were on our way down to London." So that was kind of cool.
That's random.
Yeah, man. I remember all this.
I totally forgot about that.
The amount of medicine I
smoked. And for those listeners out there that don't know it, Berardi ended up playing for the Toronto Argonauts, correct?
That's
the farm team.
That is
correct. And not ever playing high school football. He's too busy riding BMX. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, man. So me and you and Marco, we continued on down. And we went to the mini ramp jam. We met Paul there.
And I remember, go on.
I remember, the stories, you know, about, you know, this guy Paul is showing up, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, cool. And sure enough, Paul shows up and just destroys this ramp. Like, just psh, And I remember meeting him, talking to him, riding with him there. And at one point, you know, the two of us were like, we got to go to the store. Let's go get some drinks. And that was kind of like my first sort of first moment of getting to know Paul, getting to meet him and become friends with him. We rode to the store. I dropped into a Hang Five the whole way to the store. And he was like, whoa. At that point, he'd never really been around somebody doing like a brakeless flatline trick. So he was stoked on that. I was stoked on him just being absolute shredder on that.
Dude, brand. He was so good.
Unbelievable.
Standout.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It was, you were just like, whoa. Yeah.
We were both like, holy, who the hell is this dude?
Yeah. Right? Different level.
And I remember him bitching about Les charging 10 bucks every time he wanted to ride that.
Yeah. Ramp. Les would charge him five or 10 bucks to ride the ramp or something, dude. But yeah.
And we went to some dirt jumps or something, right?
Yeah. We went to some dirt jumps that were there as well.
He's killing it there. I'm pretty sure he was doing tail whips.
And that's Paul was doing tail whips. Yeah. I was doing stretch, like axe up one footers and some
classic Benny,
classic karate variations back in the day. And yeah, man, like, and that was you know, just hitting it off with Paul. Like, and that's when me and you first met him and really got to know him.
Yeah. I think we all hit it off and he started coming up to Toronto.
Yeah, man.
Hanging out quite a bit.
Rampage, fast forward, I guess that would have been 91, 92, 93 era.
Mm-hmm.
You fast forward the late 90s, you're down in Michigan. Paul's still in London at this point. I guess like mid, like 96, 95, 96, he started coming up to Rampage One. Jeff Thompson, Dave Stewart, also known as Drifter. That's when I met Drifter and Paul, or Drifter and Jeff. And man, I got to tell this story about Drifter and Jeff. One night at my sister's place, just, you know, partying up, got drunk, hammered. These guys go to bed, wake up in the morning, two rowdy dudes from Belleville. Drifter's in his Mustang at the time. And he's got it parked out in front of my sister's house. And it's like 6 in the morning, these guys wake up. Dave couldn't sleep. If you ever met Drifter Dave, you know, couldn't sit still, always on the go. So I, you know, drunkenly, we all go outside and Dave's got to go for a coffee. And this is when I first sort of saw the wildness of Drifter Dave Stewart, the awesomeness of Jeff Thompson. They hop in the Mustang and my sister's got a grassy sort of hill in front of her house. Jeff gets in the car. Dave's already in the car. It started. It's running. Jeff gets in the passenger seat and the door on this beautiful Mustang opens wide up and the bottom corner of the door digs into the grassy hill in front of my sister's house. For some reason, Drifter, he's still a little bit maybe hungover and toxic at the time. I don't endorse drinking and driving. But anyways, this is a story back in the day. Crazy kids. He guns the Mustang.
Full disclosure.
It's a 5-speed Mustang. He somehow puts the shifter into reverse. This door, the passenger door is stuck in the grass. He puts it in reverse, guns the Mustang, burns the rubber on the tire, and the door just bends all the way forward to the front fender. It's parallel to the front fender. And I'm just dying. I'm lying on my sister's driveway, just pissing my pants laughing. Dave pulls forward. Jeff gets out of the car. Him and Dave pull the door forward a little bit. And Dave's there like, what am I going to do? And Jeff walks down the street a little bit, turns around and with this like half glazed, glossy grin and glossy eyed look on his face, runs full speed at the door, body checks and jumps into the door with his shoulder, body checks it football style, bends the door back into the door frame. Drifter hits the lock button. It stays and they peel out of the street doing a donut. It was just great.
And that kicked off Jeff's automotive career.
That was, he Jeff later on replaced a U-joint on Drifter's axle shaft later on that day.
Now he's like this crazy auto mechanic out in Vancouver, BC, awesome. Working on crazy stuff.
Yeah, man, working on like Lamborghinis and shit. Like, back with Mercedes right now, but yeah, man. Wow. So that was my first real introduction to Drifter Dave, Jeff Thompson. And those guys,
Belleville boys were rowdy for sure.
Yeah, man.
Drifter's no exception. Like it was almost a problem.
Back in the day,
it was a problem.
Drifter had his alternate personality, which was Cabeza. when he got super, super duper drunk, Cabeza came out and, you know, Cabeza was fun if you were on board with Cabeza, and he could be troublesome if you weren't on board with him.
Yeah, but, he liked to urinate in people's plants and closets.
Oh my god, that's such a good story, man. Oh my, my apartment downtown, my second or third apartment downtown, he woke up and he sleptwalked into the corner of my room, and he was sleepwalking. I'm yelling at him, Dave. It was bike show weekend, I'm pretty sure. And he wasn't responding, right? And he leaned himself up into the corner of my room, and I'm pretty sure I had a play clothes. No, it was a Charlie's Angels t-shirt. I just bought a Charlie's Angels t-shirt. It was lying on the corner of my room, and he leaned up, put his hand on the wall. He lowered an imaginary toilet seat, man. Or he lifted it, sorry. Lifted up, and the whole time screaming at him. He's sleeping, dude. He's sleepwalking. Lifts the seat up and pees on the shirt in the corner, and I just sat there silent. I let him finish. He can't do anything. He flushed the imaginary flusher. He shook. He pulled up, and he walked out of my room, man. And I'm just like, all right, cool. And told him the story the next morning. He's just looking at me like, I'm sorry, man. He went. He washed my shirt. Did the laundry for me. It was great. Funniest story, man.
Drifter, yep. Man.
Yeah. So
since we're on this subject of Drifter, we should talk a little bit about him, because he right. was a great rider despite his problematic personality traits.
Well, and but, here, like, we'll let this lead into Toronto, like mm-hmm. you know, the scene in the 2000s. Dave finally moved into my apartment. He moved into Tarl's apartment, whoever's apartment would let him move into. You know, yeah.
He's kind of, it's a guy you love, but a guy
at the time. At the time, it was a bit difficult because, I mean, you'd go to bed one night and you'd wake up the next morning and Drifter's sleeping in your kitchen. Well, how'd you get through the front door, dude? It was locked. Oh, I came in, your kitchen window was open. I squeezed in. I'm like, hey, man, you know, within 5 minutes, the guy's making you laugh louder than you've ever laughed in your life. Instantly, any ill will is gone. And that's what was so great about the guy. Like,
yeah,
he could do that stuff and make you love him instantly. And just, yeah.
Yeah, and you forget great about guy. All the things that pissed you off about him.
Exactly.
Real quick, man. Yeah.
And that was his the power that led you to see him through the rough stages, right? So...
Yeah, he was a sick rider, man. He could do rubber rides back in the day. I rode with him like in the 80s with Chris Genova, I think, and Jamie McGovern. Yeah, in Belleville.
What?
Somehow
that's awesome.
Yeah, way back.
Was that at the show? Dave used to tell me about a show he was at, the Dave Volker. I think Dave Volker was at or something. I can't remember, but I don't know.
Remember.
Oh yeah, Dino toured and did some shows around Toronto.
I think it's,
and McGovern went up to those too.
Well, this was in Belleville. For whatever reason, a bunch of us were riding with a bunch of the Belleville guys.
Nice.
And, that's when I met Drifter.
You guys would have been the same age because
he's Drifter, a little bit older than
me. Drifter's exactly 5 years older than me. Okay. He would have been 51 this year.
Okay.
So he was your age, he was yours and McGovern's age range.
Yeah, closer to Chuck McGovern.
Yeah, totally. So that's super cool, man.
A lot of history, and that guy rode for Crazy Crew.
Yeah, later on he rode for Crazy Crew. Yep. Good ride.
And of course, I was gone when you guys really started riding together a lot. But my biggest memory is him competing in Toronto, and at this point he was pushing 40. And it was like, it was something because people were, no other riders were that age. And,
That was the best part about Dave. Like, so late 90s, early 2000s, he's basically couch surfing. I got my place. Charles got his place. That's when the early bike shows were happening every March. And little by little, through Taro, Taro one day was like, you know, me and Drifter met this kid named Chris Silva. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's cool. He's like, yeah, man, he's a really hardcore rider. You know, it's weird. We haven't really ridden with this kid. He's got a whole backyard setup, like a whole ramp skate park setup in his backyard over in the West End, over by St. Clair and Kilo. And I was like, no way, sick. So, yeah, so me, Taro, Drifter, we ended up, you know, meeting Chris, Shredden's backyard, a couple street missions, and little by little, early 2000s, we met Chris Silva, Butter, which is Enrique Abarca, Adrian Scotty. Ellis, Scotty I'd already known. Scotty, okay. I've known since the mid-90s, and that's a total shout-out right there. I got to give to Scotty.
Oh, yeah.
Scotty is younger than me, but he is 90s OG, Scarborough OG. Shout out to him.
Yeah, Scotty Bumbalati.
And
that backyard that Chris had was fun.
Yeah. Oh my God, that was amazing. I remember the first day I showed up to and I was like, this is sick. Yeah. And watching Chris ride.
He shredded it for a street rider. Yeah.
And I remember one night me and Drifter Dave, Dave was like, you know, we're going to go meet some of the guys and we're going to ride street at the school in the West End of Toronto. And Chris was there. I'd already met Chris at this point. I knew Adrian at this point. And there was a guy there that was killing it. And me and Drifter were so impressed with this guy. And he was on like an old Mosh, brakeless, just killing it. And that was Butter. Enrique. So I met him. I can't remember if George was there that night. Maximus, Armani, ICC rider. I think I may have met him at that night. He wasn't really into riding at the point. I think he wanted to be. But me and Drifter were like, hey man, these guys are pretty cool, you know, like Chris especially, it's very serious at this point, with the whole setup. And around this point in time, I was like, you know, I want to start up a clothing company or a bike company or something. I was thinking of names for a clothing company. And one night we're down in a bar in downtown called the Red Room Bar on Spadina, just north of Chinatown downtown. And it was me, Drifter Dave, Taro, a couple other people. And we were just sitting there, you know, loud drinking, just, and we were coming up with names for my clothing company. And I was thinking of, you know, Royal City Clothing or Inner City Clothing. And Drifter just stood up and he yelled it out. He's like, you should call it Inner City Clothing, Inner City Circle Clothing, man. And he's like, no. And then he stopped. He's like, we should start a crew called the Inner City Circle. And then, dude, classic times. We were like, yeah, that's great. Cheers, beers, more pitchers of beer. Huge fight happened. Me and Dave, we got into it about some, I don't know, big fight, freaking just terrible, whatever. And, you know, it happened all the time back then, you know, going out, you're drinking as much as you're riding, basically, in those days. And, you know, after every session downtown, you went to the bar, and then went back out to ride and went back to the bar and then went home. So anyways, I didn't speak to Dave for a couple days. And then I ended up, you know, finally, just getting back a hold of him. And he's like, dude, he's like, I'm following through on the Inner City Circle thing. I'm going to set up a meeting at, the Chinese food restaurant at, Vaughan and St. Clair. And he did, man. He called up like 10 dudes. He let a lot of people know, actually, like more than what became the crew of the ICC. And 10, 11 dudes showed up, and these guys, we were what became the Inner City Circle.
So Dave's responsible for kicking that.
Yes. Off. Dave created, and Taro was in there too. Taro has to be there. Dave later that night after the bar, actually, Dave went back to Taro's place and drew up the logo, the infamous I in the middle with this, the circle around it, which were actually two C's backwards, which is ICC. And he drew that logo in Taro's apartment that night with a pen, line piece of paper, and signed his name at the bottom and held the meeting, made up t-shirts. The 11, 12 dudes that were part of the crew at that point, we all chipped in money to rent a warehouse unit.
Oh, that's right.
And this warehouse, it was cool, man. And just to let kids know, if you know you ever need a place in the wintertime or a place to ride, do it yourself, man. Just find a place that's for rent. Find as many people as you can who hopefully can give you some money every month. And that's what we did, man. We signed up people. A lot of people gave like about $200 at the start because we had to pay first and last. It was $1,600 a month for rent to this place. And it was an old car garage, actually. It was pretty greasy in there. We had to clean up the floors and everything. And it was $1,600 a month. And we had enough dudes who put in at the start. And then literally every month we made our rent by charging people $10 a session. And you could come in and ride the warehouse, $10 a session, shred the place. It was great, man. The best times. Like, it was an incredible time, man.
Yeah, it was a fun place. I remember going a few times.
So, yeah, the 10 of us, we built up the ramps in that warehouse, Kiel and St. Clair area. And
it wasn't too far from Chris, really.
Yeah, it was. Dude, Chris could go by with his key. Chris could sleep there. Drifter Dave ended up actually living in there. cool. We had a small bathroom. We held a contest in there. A couple famous dudes came by the place. Jersey Mike Taylor from England showed up. He rode there.
No way.
Yeah, he showed up because we had that place running during the 2004 2005 Toronto Bike Show Metro contest. And a lot of dudes would show up to hear about the skate park, and they'd walk in and go, oh my god, it's so small, this is for real. But dude, Mike Taylor from England showed up, and he shredded, man. He stayed in there for a couple hours and rode and killed it.
Who am I thinking of? Those guys from London that used to come up.
No. You're thinking of, are you thinking of the old dudes like Tim and Marty and stuff?
Maybe that's it.
Mike Wilkinson from
Wilkinson. That's it.
Yeah. Okay.
That's
Mike. It. Yeah. Wilkinson. Another shout out there. That's coming. Wilkinson, another dude, him and Greg Taylor, I met in the 90s, at the Oakville Park, Oakville Skate Park. I went to a couple contests there with
the Launchpad.
Launchpad, dude. Yeah, man. I won an S&M
flatline there.
Yeah. They used to have contests there. Mike reminds me of the days I used to do bar spins and stuff in contests.
Half bar spins.
Yeah, dude. Over that spine, man. Over that crazy spine where I think Paul like knocked his teeth out on that spine. Oh my god. Yeah, that was brutal. Anyways, so shout out to Mike and Greg. All the dudes from the West End there in the 90s. Yeah.
What did you call that warehouse? Did you have a name for it?
It was just the warehouse. Literally, it was just called the warehouse. The ICC warehouse. It was
like a clubhouse. That's what was cool. You could drink beers in there and hang out.
Show up, the members, if you paid money, if you gave money into first and last, you also got a key. I went out and I personally made keys. And I gave them to people who
hey, Jamie.
Yeah. John says hi. So I personally gave out keys to anybody who gave, you know, more than like $100 or whatever. It gave you a key. And that helped out with monthly payments and stuff. Wilkinson had a key. Everybody in the crew had a key. We gave our buddy a couple skaters downtown keys. Skater Jimmy, I think, had a key. We had bands playing there.
How long did it last?
It lasted exactly one winter, dude. And it was most, this is awesome. There was so much drama and so many good times. It was a biker clubhouse, man. All that was missing were engines on our bikes, man. It was a clubhouse, dude. And leather jackets with patches. That's all that was missing. And there was more drama than you could shake a stick at, man. This is when Drifter reached his height of drinking really badly. It was actually the warehouse period around Christmas time, the winter time, when he
intervention.
We had intervention with him. He took it seriously, and we had just already had an intervention with him that fall at one day at the trails. We'd sort of laid down the law with him. And then we did it again during the warehouse.
So he relapsed.
Yeah. So he went, cleaned himself up, went back to Belleville, I believe, for a while there. I ran the warehouse while he did that. And just the stories and the drama, just amazing, man. Amazing.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. We could talk for hours about Drifter, I'm sure.
Yep. Yep. So then around this time, so this is when the Inner City Circle is now formed. I think there was 12 dudes at the time. And we started filming. This is when we started the videos as well. First video came out, not everybody was, I can't remember if everybody was in it at that point in time. I don't think so.
I'm sure the first one that kicked off got other people excited about joining.
Yeah. Like Adrian, Chris, Butter, these guys have been going out with high-end cameras from the 90s and just destroying themselves. The first time I met Adrian Ellis, another pivotal point, I was going to meet everybody at Hogtown for a street ride. And I was told, you know, look for the dude, broken arm, yellow Haro Blammo, I think. It was a blam. I can't remember, man. Yellow Street Haro, late 90s. And there's Adrian standing outside, punk rock, hip hop, punk rock as hell, standing outside, holding his camera, yellow bike. I'm like, dude, you're E. He's like, yo, man, yeah, that's me, man. I'm like, hey, I'm Ben. He's like, oh, nice to meet you. and another great friendship right off the bat, right there. In the first ICC video, I don't really have a part, but I have a few clips. The Greyhound bus wall ride, classic Toronto spot.
Oh yeah.
Adrian, there's some nighttime footage in that video that Adrian shot on his camera. I do a fake you wall ride. Adrian shot that. I love that clip simply because of that guy. And that was awesome. Yeah, man.
Anyone listening, you can see those videos on YouTube, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Four or five of them, right?
I think we're, I think we're at number five.
Yeah.
Because our last, second last video was 5 and 10. I think it was titled 5 videos in 10 years, I think.
So there's some pretty good riding in there.
Dude, definitely. Yeah. Chris Silva's very first video part, which he rode to Iron Maiden. I think the whole video is all hip hop, and then he rides to Iron Maiden and just blows people's minds.
Yeah. Chris Silva's an anomaly, man. He's really an amazing rider. His longevity too. He's still killing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good guy. I love Chris. He knows.
Yep. So, I mean, after that, it was just, and so at this point, you were talking about like me and Drifter, especially Drifter being older, like Drifter and I think I was in my late 20s already. Drifter was in his early 30s when we started filming street parts. Like, who does that?
Right,
he starts filming and they're
you start breaking hips and stuff. You're not
right. Like, and Drifter, Drifter was still very fluent with handrails at this point, man. Drifter could go flatline a park lot, and he could just as easily go hit right side handrails or left side handrails. He was ambidextrous, right left didn't matter, man.
Pretty athletic guy for sure.
His video parts show that. He could, you know, one video clip you see him do an elbow glide around the corner of a schoolyard, lands the elbow glide and does a hand, like slides a double peg down a handrail. He was, I believe he was late 30s at that point, early 40s, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's what I loved about Dave. You know, he was a BMXer through and through.
Yeah, so I mean, that's just sort of how it just blew up at that point. Everybody's scrambling to get cameras, tapes, the drama over people recording over other people's tapes, and we already downloaded that footage, but you recorded over this, and fights, and we wouldn't talk to each other, and there was phone calls of like, you know, video deadlines, you got to get your part ready, and you'd be hung over, and it'd be like November, and you got to still go film 20 clips, and you're just like, oh my god, why am I doing this, man? And then you go out and, you know, you're breaking yourself off on handrails and ledges and wall rides and just, and in the end, it was all worth it, man. It was.
Wouldn't you do like a video premieres and stuff and everyone get together?
Dude, the ICC video premieres were some of the best.
Like, yeah.
Our first premiere was in a bar, I believe just off Queen Street, downtown Toronto, man. And we went in, bar was packed. Half the bar didn't even know this premiere was happening. And all these rowdy BMXers in there, Toronto scene had just started, ICC had just started. And this premiere was off the hook. It was insane. It was such a good premiere. One of our other video premieres was at a nightclub, right downtown in the heart of Club District in Toronto, that Adrian E and Enrique Butter worked at. They were,
They worked there.
Yeah. They worked in the club, man. You would go in, me, Drifter, whoever else would go in through the front door. You go in and there's, Butter and E running around, collecting bottles, doing club stuff, living that lifestyle. Yeah, man. So they actually held a premiere there. Huge downtown nightclub. That was absolutely amazing. We had another premiere in a movie theater in Old Toronto on Roncesvalles. The movie theater, we had it up on the marquee and everything, man. Inner City Circle video premiere tonight. And on the front of the movie theater, that was a good one. I think that was actually, which one was that? Can't remember, but that was actually, I think in 2010, 2011, one of our last videos, actually, that premiere.
Is the ICC still a thing?
It is. And it'll be a thing till the day we die. I mean, it was a brotherhood.
Always a member, yeah.
Half the crew got tattoos.
Cool.
It was very serious. And to this day, I mean, I'm actively filming clips right now for our 20-year anniversary, which will be next year.
Whoa.
2022. So 2023 will be a 20-year anniversary of the Inner City Circle.
Time flies, man.
So we're actively filming right now. Chris is a machine nonstop, 36 this year, 37. Still filming. He's got the wrists of a broken 80-year-old, but
he's got that full beard.
So. Yeah, you may see Chris finally repping Rexdale Trails this year a bit more than he has as he ages.
How'd we transition from ICC Street Rider to this Rexdale is good. Trail Keeper?
And you'll see this is how it all fits in. I mean, not a lot of people know this, but in 2001, last time Paul Buchanan was in Toronto, he was at my place. Rexdale was 7 years old by this point. Rexdale was found in 1994. Rexdale Trails, 1994. Toronto, Canada, BMX Trails. Thanks, Ride USA, for calling them ancient ruins in a kink BMX road trip article. It was partly true. They had gone there and seen the trails, the kink team, when I was just engulfed in street riding. Rexdale had been around for a while. But anyways, that was later on after
they were neglected for a while. Is that the deal?
Anyways, I'm going off on a tangent there. Anyways, so by 2001, summer 2001, Paul was up, did a lot of digging at Rexdale, like some really important digging at Rexdale. That's when Paul basically showed me, if you want to get these things for more of a downhill feel, dig the jumps downhill. Like, take a landing, dig it way down into the ground, below ground level, right? So your landing is now massively long. So it goes down, it goes below ground level. You then hit your next lip, which is not that big, or a little, fair size. And then the next landing, you dig further down into the ground, even further than the last one, right? It creates a downhill effect. It was mind blowing.
So Paul knew this.
Paul knew this. We had this one line where the one big line at Rexdale is called, it's the first jump. That's all we call it. We call it the first jump. Anybody that's been to Rexdale knows the first jump. It's really big. It's pretty intimidating. You used to go off it and you could go three ways. You could go A line, B line, or C line. So if you came down the trail and went around the first jump, you went into a line that is now called Paul's line. And it's a fun line. You would go around the big first jump and you would go over a roller and you could just hit this sort of smaller first jump and land. And it was pretty frustrating because you had to almost pedal for the next jump. And so anyways, Paul's up and we were discussing all this. I have an infamous photo that Jimmy Rexdale took of Paul that I post quite often. It's just a rad photo of Paul of the trails. Anyways, it was taken during that week. And I was at work one day all day and I knew Paul was at the trails and I was there all day or at work. And I finally get out to the trails. I'm sweating. I see Paul and he's sitting down and I showed up and I look at everything. I just, my mouth dropped, man. This guy had spent probably 8 to 10 hours digging this line about 3 feet below ground level. It was a massive amount of work. This guy moved tons of earth and it created this downhill effect. It started my way of thinking with digging and stuff like that. Sunday night of that week in 2001, September, we left the trails and he had his van there, the Jeff Thompson, the infamous van that Jeff,
the Thompson, shorty.
Yeah, the Jeff had put a stereo in.
And he visited me in Athens in that thing.
Yeah, man. Yeah, he had the wood, I believe it was like a wood dash or something. Jeff and him had made or something, and Jeff installed the stereo and it just cranked. He was always playing Johnny Cash and stuff. And that night, it's funny. I was getting out, going to my apartment, and Paul's like, you know, man, I'm leaving tomorrow for the States, going down to Texas through New York City and stuff. And I was like, cool, man. He's like, dude, passion door is open, man, just come with me. And I was like, man, I'm like, you know, at that point I was working at Chrysler car dealership in Toronto and I had this good feeling about Toronto in 2001. I had this feeling that there was going to be a scene and that I had to stay. But I didn't get in his van, man. You're right, exactly. And who knows whether or not it would have been a good, like a great, obviously going down there with Paul to the States, to Texas and everything probably would have been amazing. Maybe that would have changed my course in terms of, you know, maybe more coverage or something, but I was like, I'm going to stay in Toronto, dude. And it was just, you know, quick, you know, the pasture door is open if you want to come. No. So next morning,
he's such a free spirit, that guy.
Yeah, you know? Right.
And it's like, do you want to join him?
Yeah, and this was, you know, him going back down in 2001. So I went to work the next morning. I believe it was September 1st, 2001, or September 11th. Yeah, September 11th.
2001.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, 9/11. And I get into work and I'm at work having a coffee when a buddy of mine at work goes, hey man, the World Trade Center just got bombed in New York City. And I was like, what? Crazy. I was like, New York. I'm like, oh my God, Paul left for there yesterday or this morning. I'm like, I hope he's okay. Cause he had mentioned he wasn't sure if he was going to go into New York City or if he was going to go through Ohio or like through there. Right. Mm-hmm. And after reading Sandy Carson's write up on Paul after he passed away, it's very funny because he chose Ohio because Sandy Carson writes about meeting Paul first in Ohio on September 11th. How crazy is that?
Oh, wow.
He left Toronto, I think the night before. He was staying at Tarl's house the night before or something. I can't remember.
So he got across the border because I think they shut down the borders after.
Yeah, I believe he got across the border because he left really early in the morning that morning or something. I don't know because we later on when I ran into Paul years later, we didn't actually talk about that. I wish we had.
Right. Yeah.
We forgot about it. But yeah, after Paul passed away and I was reading some stories by different people and Sandy Carson was talking about his first time meeting Paul. And it was on that day and Paul had chosen to go through, I think, Ohio or something and just randomly ran into Paul. And I guess those guys became really good friends, obviously. And
You see the little cartoon that Taj made?
Dude, that was amazing. Absolutely love it. Yep. That was absolutely killer, man.
Oh yeah.
That described Paul to a T.
Sure. Even the cartoon looks just like Paul. Like, now, Taj is talented, man.
The description of Paul not waiting for a camera to be pulled out.
That's so Paul.
Yep.
Yeah. He was elusive, you know? He'd just do it and wasn't for the fame or the glory.
Yeah.
I'm just going to shred by myself. Soul Rider.
Pull a massive gap that has been already, you know, has already been photographed. You know, Jimmy LeVan doing it. It was crazy. People like, what the hell? This is nuts. So you would think the next guy to go there would be like, okay, I got to get this on camera, you know? Like,
got
to
one-up it or something.
Yeah, you know, not Paul. Too humble. Nope.
No, I just want to see what it felt like.
Nope.
You know, it is cool to think, like, I remember, Ben, when we met him in London and we were riding those dirt jumps. And we're like, damn, this guy is good. And then to know that later he meets up with Taj and Joe Rich, arguably two of the most influential guys at the time. And they're like, this dude is good. And, you know, put him on Terrible. I mean, to ride for Terrible One is it's the epitome of coolness, really. Especially at the time. I mean,
at the time, you've only got S&M, Standard, FBM, and
but Air Terrible One was kind of like zero. It was like the shit.
Yeah, dude.
And it just made me feel cool.
Dude,
I know Paul. I know that guy.
Yeah, man. I remember when he gave me, I still have it, Terrible One t-shirt. It's a gray colored t-shirt. It just says T1, T-1 on the front. And then it has the upside down T1 badge on the sleeve. I still upstairs in my dresser right now. I remember thinking, oh my God, dude, you're hooked with T1. This is sick. And he's like, yeah. He's like, yeah, it's pretty cool, man. It's pretty cool.
He's so humble. I was like,
all right, man, let's go to the bar. Okay, cool, man. You know, just off to the bar, you know. Paul actually dated, a girl I was seeing at the time, her best friend. We used to go out on, you know, double dates. It was hilarious, man.
No way.
Yeah, had things gotten more serious between him and that girl, Paul may have stayed in Toronto. Who knows? But it didn't actually end up.
Hard to hold that guy down.
Right. So, so that sort of brings Paul into the trails, and then how, you know, in the middle, it's sort of like when the Inner City Circle got big, filming Street. Just to let people know, there was this rule. I hated this rule, man. But it was Street only in the ICC videos. So that sort of crushed my flatland, my ramp riding, my trail riding. So I didn't care, dude. I was so stoked. And this was finally like the kind of crew that I wanted to take off in Toronto. And I was so stoked on it. And Drifter and I were just finally, you know, like all the other guys that moved out west or moved down to the United States. And me and Drifter stayed in Toronto. Me, Drifter, and Tarl stayed in Toronto. And because we just had a feeling, you know, like, and especially me, I always knew that something good was going to happen. And sure enough, man, it just, the Street thing got huge. And I sort of let the trails go by the wayside. Tarl was still going out a little bit, but not really. Mid-2000s, Jimmy was in and out. But Jimmy Rexdale, Trails Jimmy would go out only when other people would go out. It was hard to get him out there by himself to dig anymore at that point. So, yeah, King Teen comes to town mid-2000s. Chris Silva ends up taking him there, and they look pretty rough. So, unfortunately, Rexdale got a bad write-up in Ride US magazine. Ride BMX, unfortunately, we went to a set of trails. I believe the quote was, they looked like ancient dinosaurs. Had they used a shovel for about an hour and a half, they would have been rideable, but nobody picked up a shovel, you know, visiting pros. So, fast forward, you know, it kept growing. I mean, to get back out there digging, enter a guy, Maverick Dave. Oh, yeah. I love Maverick because of what he did. Him and Grant Kattar in the mid-2000s went out to Rexdale, and these guys just laid the shovel into these jumps like nobody had ever done before. Maverick, the guy built mountains. He built mountains with his own back.
He kind of looks like a mountain man.
He did. He's one of the toughest dudes I know, man. His biceps are like the size of houses, man. They're massive. And man, it was just so good to see guys that were right into it. And it brought back that feeling of when, you know, it was me, Jimmy, and Taro, Paul digging, all the kids from the 90s that were there and stuff, you know? So mid to late 2000s, Rexdale just made a resurgence. I started going out all the time and going out doing, like, you know, massive digging sessions, getting them back to shape, getting them up to big proportions. And yeah, man, I've been hardcore at it ever since. Me and Maverick, Drifter Dave, also sort of, we sort of just, you know, sort of, we didn't really get out of street riding, but we just sort of relaxed with it and got back into trails riding. Drifter put in so much work at the trails. Rest in peace, Dave. Thank you for all the work. Amazing.
Yeah. Hey, just for those folks that are listening, maybe we should say, just let everyone know what happened to Drifter.
Passed away.
It's an interesting story, isn't it?
Yeah, he unfortunately decided to, he'd really got into fishing, kayaking. The man just, you couldn't keep him inside an apartment. You couldn't keep him inside a house.
And he's native too. I think, and he visited, you know, his
native Indian. Yeah. He met his birth mom. He had a great time out in, I believe
out west somewhere, right?
Yeah. His band was, I believe, in Edmonton, his reserve, where his real mom.
And did they introduce him to kayaking when he went out there?
No, he got introduced to kayaking out here, actually.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah, it was a blessing in disguise that he got to go out west and meet his family, meet his real mom, reconnect.
So he was adopted. Is that the story?
Yeah, he was adopted in his younger years. Okay. By his mom and dad, his stepmom and dad out in Belleville. So that's how Dave made it out to Belleville. But he passed away about a year and a half ago. He went out onto the Ottawa River when you should not be going on the Ottawa River.
It's flooded, right?
It was a terrible storm season. Very quiet, beautiful day when he went out, though. The water was like glass. And being a BMXer, he was buying, I don't know, he was buying some stuff for his kayak, always constantly tricking out his kayak. If anybody's ever seen it, he's got a video on YouTube about his old town trawler kayak that he tricked out. Ended up just making a mistake. By shore, the water on the Ottawa River was crystal clear. It was so high that it actually come into the park where he had parked his truck. He put his kayak in the water, glassy smooth, went out. As far as we know, the current caught him.
Not return? Was there not like footage of him returning?
No. There was just a picture of him on shore, like a satellite photo, I guess, that was able to be captured through the police investigation. And it showed him on shore. And it was totally, you can tell by the picture, it was Dave. Like, just trying out something new on his kayak, probably quiet part of the river, but unfortunately getting out onto that river after it's been flooded, I guess from what locals tell you, it gets glassy smooth at the sides and you feel like you're okay with a paddle. Once you get a few feet further out in the Ottawa River is pretty gnarly, man. Mm-hmm. And there's a current even when it's glassy smooth, and he got out into that. I guess it pulled him down the river, and that's pretty much it, man. I really can't say after that, but
that was it, huh? Yeah.
Epic dude.
Yeah, it's a hell of a way to go. I mean, you know, he's doing something he loved, so
epic dude. And he went out in an epic way, man.
Yeah. Well, rest in peace, Dave. It's amazing. And yep. We didn't even touch on the whole snow bike thing, but
Oh yeah. But dude, yeah, this podcast go on for hours, man. Like Drifter Dave,
yeah it wasn't Matt Berenger. Drifter Dave did this stuff way before.
Yeah, and, Drifter's keep it short. Been doing Drifter snow bike since the late 80s. And that's all there needs to be said.
Yeah, just Google Drifter snow bikes and you'll see some cool stuff.
I have an original patent that him and his stepdad spent a lot of money on in my garage right now from the late 90s that he had done up. So yeah. Definitely the pioneer, man. Definitely. And Drifter, pivotal at the trails, lots of work at the trails, man. That guy, I will be putting together future video edits of just trails footage of that guy that I'll be putting up to music and everything. I have a ton of footage of that guy.
Oh yeah, you need to do that. That'd be good.
That's pretty much a now until current. Moved out to Ajax after living downtown forever. Close to 20 years downtown, and ended up having my daughter about 9 years ago, and here we are sitting now, man.
You're in the burbs now,
right, dude? Yeah. So to keep you current, I guess
you still playing guitar, Ben?
Yes, all my hobbies current, like playing guitar. I wish I was playing it more often than not, but. Downstairs. I got a kick-ass PV amp downstairs, a couple axes, a couple fenders. I still have my original punk rock Al Dega Sears guitar from when I was 14 years old. still plays amazing. One of my favorite guitars ever. Got laid off my job of working for Chrysler for like the last 25 years. I don't know. I started with Chrysler when I was 19 in Toronto. And thanks to COVID, I got laid off.
Is that a job that might come back when things get back?
Maybe. That's what I'm being told. Hopefully it's been a year now. So, So this has kind of been a blessing in disguise again, giving me time to spend time with my daughter, take her to school, pick her up.
And she's at home too, right?
Man. And she's got a BMX. She's into riding. And, it's been cool, and now got into, like, I've been riding BMX since 1982, since I was 7 years old, man, so what better way to make some money than start customizing bikes, like, so got a few rare vintage ones and some classic big wheels, and
they're Canadian-themed bikes, it seems like.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it Canadian, so that means, obviously, you're going to see a lot of low-end models, and, you know, we can all laugh about that. Anybody listening that's from Canada will know, you know, the old Canadian rallies, Norcos.
Here's one for you to look for, Ben. Yep. My buddy next door, who I used to ride with, Neil Barker, had an Eaton's breakaway freestyle bike. Ooh. And it had platforms. It had welded on frame standards.
I remember that one.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it was a cool bike. I thought it was a pretty cool bike, and I've never seen another one since. So.
Yeah, yep.
If you can dig one of those up.
Yes. Yep.
Well, hey, I know we're trying to wrap things up here, but that brings us to our new segment on future episodes. Hopefully we'll keep doing this. Listener mail.
Yeah. All right.
You ready for this, Anthony?
I am.
Okay. I don't know how much time. We got a few minutes still?
Yeah, go. Okay. Go for it.
All right. So, somebody wrote in by the name of Graham Burke.
Woo! Love you, Graham. Miss you.
Yeah, Miss Graham.
You still have the phone number list? The phone number list, I would love that. Back in the day, kids, Graham Burke, Toronto local, huge superstar on the Toronto scene.
ProTile innovator.
Before the cell phone, folks, we used landline phones, and this cat took 20 to 30 dudes' phone numbers, wrote them all out, printed them out on a piece of paper, and had them laminated, if anybody remembers what laminating is. And everybody in the crew in Toronto had this phone number list. And every Saturday and Sunday,
you got
a phone call. Okay, what's his question?
I remember that now. Okay.
Yeah, dude.
I was like, where are you going with this, Ben? Okay, I got it.
Yep.
All right, so Graham asks, all right, number one, How does that saying go? If you answer the phone, ring it.
Oh my God. Oh, Pastor Faraz. Man. Yeah, if the phone answers, ring it. Dude, that was another BMX thing out of a magazine, man. Oh, okay. That was like when I cut the things out of the magazine and taped them to the dash when me and Anthony went to Montreal.
well, apparently Graham remembered that, so he's just trying to figure how it went.
Okay. Yeah, I think I was, I think we were at maybe Tarl's house, either hungover or drunk. Answer the phone, ring it. Yeah, it hurt.
All right, there's a few more questions, so okay. We don't have to dig too deep.
I remember that though, Graham.
All right. Question two. There's four here. What was your favorite contest ever?
Favorite contest ever. Oh my God. I guess maybe the Orleans one where me and Ian slept in cardboard boxes.
I think that was my favorite contest too.
Could be that one. Oh man. Or it could have been the contest at the warehouse, the Inner City Circle warehouse. That was pretty sick.
So or, a tie.
Man, it could have been the Chicago BS contest. I never entered that one, but I went to it. Would it be one that I entered, I guess? Yeah, man. Those
Chicago BS contests were pretty epic.
Come on, man. Standing there, there's Dave Mira sitting beside you, and like, you know, you're drinking a pot, and Dave Mira's sitting beside you. You turn around, Chase Goon's walking beside you. Like, you know, Rick Malterno's like in front of you, like,
right.
You know,
Dave Clymer's trying to do gaps and
Yeah.
Bob Cole trying crazy shit on the box. Yeah, that was an awesome contest.
But sure. I guess most memorable would be the KOV contest in Kitchener-Waterloo in 1989.
Damn you, Ben. Damn right? you.
That's
Anthony. Matt Hoffman, I don't know how you feel about this, man.
Yeah, no, that's salt in the wound.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Let's moving on here. Okay, and now speaking of Ian, Graham asks, where's Ian these days?
Ian's still in Aurora, as far as I know. He's got kids. He's married. He does not have the long hair anymore.
I saw pictures of him wearing shorts with his tucked-in shirt.
And he might have... Yeah, I might have a bit of a receding hairline, but I guarantee you he's still, I bet you any money, as funny as heck.
He's probably, punk rock.
Thanks to Ian McLarty, I had a bit of a John Hughes youth, maybe, I guess, because of him, a John Hughes movie moment, you know? Ian McLarty was straight out of those movies, man.
He's a wild man. Remember the security jackets he used to rock?
Oh my God. Just the parties at his house, like his house would be through the roof, tearing through baseball diamonds in Ottawa in his brand new car, ripping the bike rack off.
Shits. He's a rich kid. He didn't care.
I was the poor, quiet kid from the country, and Ian was my John Hughes movie, Breakfast Club kid that just had the car, had the women, had the
big house. I worked at his dad's car.
At the greeting card club. Yeah, man. Yeah.
And that was a great time. Yep. He's a good dude. He was a good dude.
Yeah, man. I love Ian. Yeah.
Okay. Right. So, question number four. Mm-hmm. What is your dream car?
Ooh, what is my dream car? Oh, dude, that would have to be...
is it a Dodge?
After 26 years of working for them...
Maybe not.
No. Honestly, my favorite out of all of them. Knowing cars inside and out nowadays, I would choose an older Dodge muscle car over any of them.
Charger? Challenger?
Yeah, easily a Challenger. A Challenger any day. Easily. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Beautiful cars, man.
Yeah. Or a station wagon, bro, or a mid-80s GM station wagon, bro.
There was nothing wrong with that.
The swinging Mac 4, man.
If you had that today,
mm-hmm.
Pretty pimp.
Somebody in the neighborhood, I was out driving this morning, dropping my kid off at school. Somebody in the neighborhood has that car. I was gonna take a picture of it, but they're outside. I thought it'd be weird, but that's a cool question. I'm glad somebody asked me that. No way.
All right. Well, Graham says that's all. So there you go. Shout out to Graham Burks. Good to hear from him.
Nice.
So where does that leave us? We got anything else we want to ask Benny?
Yeah, I guess
I think we covered.
To let anybody know, I mean, currently right now, if you're interested in the Inner City Circle, if it's still rocking, we're currently trying to get, in the current moment, guys like me, Chris Silva, Butter, we are filming, riding. We're trying to get some more of the other guys like Adrian, George back in there, Patrick and Leland. Hopefully we can get these guys out. And in a year or two, we're going to have a 20-year anniversary video. And other than that, if you need a custom bike made, BMX or a big bike, let me know.
How do they get a hold of you, Ben?
Instagram's the best way, man. I'm on Instagram every day. So
Rexdale Trails?
Yeah, at Rexdale BMX Trails. Ben Rennie. Ben Rennie, BENRINNE.
Yeah. How old are you now, Ben? You
didn't know 46 in January, man.
Dang.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Yeah.
We're old, John.
It happened quick, didn't it?
Yeah.
Well, hell, man. I'm going to be up there this summer. Actually, Jamie Delaney is, I'm hiring him to be a canoe guide.
Okay.
So my brother and I and my cousins are all going to go on a canoe trip, and we're going to dump the old ashes.
Nice.
Yeah. Are you about to whip out your?
Oh, shoot! Yeah, sorry about that. You guys are. That's not going to be on video, is it?
No. There's no video.
But, I got to pee real bad. I was just sort of like.
All right, well, we will wrap it up, Benny. Good to see you, man. You look younger than last time I saw you. I don't know how you do it. Must be all that beer you drink.
Riding. What we just talked about, man. Riding.
I don't need it, right?
Man, go ride your bike, dude. I don't care how old you are, what you're doing, how many kids you got. I don't care, man. Get on your BMX bike. Go ride your bike, bro. Like
wise words.
Just whenever you got a moment, go out. And man, the feeling you have when you come back in the house is top notch. Like I don't care if you go out and ride curbs for 5 minutes or do a flatland trick out front. Come back in your house in your late 40s, 50s, or whatever. I guarantee you feel great. Go straight to the fridge, grab a beer, and go, that was great. Like, best therapy ever, man. Ride your bike.
I think we can end it on that.
Holy crap, I got to pee, man. Jesus.
All right, man. Thanks so much, dude.
I think I'm right.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, awesome, man. Thank you, guys. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
You're listening to Banter, a BMX podcast with John Doker and Anthony Berardi. We'll be right back.